UFOs, are they aliens, government secret projects, the imaginings of disturbed individuals, or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters.
Welcome to UFO Encounters. I'm Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. I think we're going to have a fascinating program for you. We're talking to an honest-to-goodness science writer. She's very accomplished, and she has a new book out. It is called They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Our guest today is Sarah Scholes, and as I said, she's quite prolific. She's a science writer whose work has appeared in The Atlantic, Slate, Smithsonian, The Washington Post, Scientific American, Popular Science, Discover, New Scientist, and Wired. A former editor at Astronomy Magazine, she worked at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, the location of the first ever SETI project, and lives in Denver, Colorado. Sarah Scholes, welcome to the program and looking forward to talking about this book, They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it also.
Now, to be clear, kind of your perspective, I mean, I kind of view you from looking at this material and so forth as like the objective bystander. In other words, you're not necessarily what I would call a UFO believer or a UFO debunker. You're just looking at it from the UFO community, from a journalistic view and kind of an outsider view, to kind of just kind of look in at this community in kind of an anthropological way. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's correct. I try to approach it like I would approach any other article, which, you know, in journalism, some kind of objectivity and neutrality is very valued. And I tried to come to this with that, just an open-mindedness to evidence and kind of a bird's eye view of what was going on in a community that I wasn't really a part of.
And you had done a previous book on this idea of looking for something out there, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. I wrote a book called Making Contact, Jill Tarter and the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And Jill Tarter, if people have seen the movie or read the book Contact, she is the basis for the main character, who is a person who spends her life looking for radio broadcasts from intelligent aliens. And so this book was kind of the history of that field and her place in it.
So I'm going to ask you a bookend question at the end of the interview, but going into this, what was your perception of the UFO community per se?
Yeah, when I first started, which was a little bit before I started writing the book, I wrote one article about UFOs before I embarked on a full, you know, 300-page endeavor. I kind of had the view that I think a lot of people coming from the more scientific community have, which is just that I mostly didn't pay attention to UFOs or people who were interested in them. And so the ideas I had were a little more of the tinfoil hat variety. But as literally as soon as I started reporting on UFOs, I realized that wasn't true at all, and that there were a lot of people who were doing really good, really grounded, really interesting work. And that was actually what made me want to write the book. And I was like, if all these smart, interesting people think this topic is so compelling, like, what am I missing that I've never paid attention to it before?
Now, one thing that I think is interesting, when you talk about any community of people in any field of study or any human endeavor, we tend to talk to them in a monolith. But if you look at, you know, over the last 15 years, I've talked to a lot of people in the UFO field and in other kind of associated fields of parapsychology and the paranormal and the supernatural. And people, if they really look at it, would be shocked at how divided and how many different splinters there are, at least from my perspective, in even something you would think that would be pretty monolithic, like the UFO community. Is that what you found?
Yes, absolutely. And in the book, I actually tried to take each chapter as kind of a different subgroup within the groups. I mean, obviously, there's the spectrum that you mentioned already, from UFO true believers who just believe everything, and then the debunkers who kind of try to take down everything. And then in the middle, there's a lot of people who are just kind of open to a lot of different ideas. I've found people who are mostly interested in them from, you know, the governmental perspective. What are the things the Defense Department and other groups have done to study them? Then there are people who are more interested in the kind of the consciousness aspect, more of the new age kind of UFOs. You know, there are people who are interested and don't have a hypothesis about what they are. There are people who are interested and think for sure they're probably aliens. And so, yeah, it really runs the gamut. And so, yeah, I probably should never actually say the UFO community, because there isn't actually just one UFO community at all.
Well, when you look at the UFO community, there I used it again. One thing that's been talked about a lot of the time is almost this kind of conspiratorial bent that the government and they, the powers that be, know a lot more than they're letting on. Can you talk to us about some of your interaction in that area of the field?
Yes, I think you find that a lot, especially on the internet, that and actually, I mean, among the general populace, there was a recent poll that I think the number was 67% of people, just all people in the U.S., think that the government is hiding something about UFOs, whatever they are. And so it's a very widespread belief. And I think, well, and you know, I don't know that it's not true. And I think what really plays into that, which you can see in stories like that, the one about Roswell and the idea that there are alien bodies or crash saucers at Area 51, is that there's no way to prove it wrong. Like, you won't ever get the secret information you're seeking after, probably. And also, if the government denies it, then that is just more evidence that there is something to hide. And so there's really no way to either get at the truth or deny it or affirm it. And so just whatever everybody thinks can keep going. But I mean, there is historical precedent for the idea that the government might want to hide something. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with the Robertson panel report. Sure. From kind of the middle of the 20th century, which kind of lays out the idea that the government is afraid of people being too interested in UFOs because it might cause mass panic and clog intelligence channels. And so they needed to just keep everybody calm about that. And, you know, that understandably makes people not trust the government about things.
Now, if you think about it, I mean, the thing that is appealing, I think, about that is this, is that the government definitely keeps secrets. And sometimes it's perfectly justifiable for reasons of national security and so forth. And if you look at things like weapons programs, and many of those things fly, whether they're missiles or drones or planes or whatever it might be, there are secrets kept about these things for very good reasons, national security. So it very easily plays into the idea that the government is covering up things. And I've talked to a number of people who have felt, and these are reasonable people, who have felt, for example, Project Blue Book, a big part of that was just, you know, it could have been called Project Whitewash. We wanted it to go away. We wanted to explain this away. So, I mean, does that necessarily mean that you know, Eisenhower had lunch with aliens? No, it doesn't. But does it play into the idea that that's possible from the standpoint that the government sure wouldn't tell us? I could totally understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even in modern things like the you know, the most recently revealed UFO investigation program, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program.
Right.
You know, while that was going on, there's a lot of debate about what it actually was, but while that was going on, the government was also saying, we're not interested in UFOs, we haven't studied them in decades, which appears to not be totally true. And so, yeah, you're right, there's lots of very valid reasons besides having lunch with aliens to keep things a secret, but it doesn't engender any trust. I think you're right.
Now, one thing that's happened in the last few years, and I think it's very interesting because I recount this story and I tell it all the time on the show. I'm 50 now, so I'm getting on in years. But maybe 7-8 years ago, I had gone to a UFO event in Ohio, and I won't say the group out of respect. And I was in my early 40s. And I swear I brought down the average age in that room by 30 years because it was all older people. It seems like ufology and UFO studies maybe, you know, 8-10 years ago, it almost seemed to be the loss of interest. It had become a big joke and so forth, I think, in the general community, general society. But then a couple of things happened. You had those videos come out from the U.S. Navy, the Tic Tac video and so forth, and you had the appearance of a rock star, Tom DeLonge. What did you find about how Tom DeLonge has been received? Because it seems like, whether it's a coincidence with these other things happening and these videos coming to the fore, or if he's been moving things behind the scenes, it seems like a lot has changed since he's come on the scene. What did you find out about Tom DeLonge and the attitude towards him?
Yes, well, Tom DeLonge has been interested in UFOs for a very long time. I found, you know, evidence that he's been doing research since going back to at least the early 90s and probably before that, although I didn't, you know, the internet stops a little bit before that. But he has been sincerely researching these things for a long time, and it does seem like he has been making connections with powerful people in the Defense Department and also at private companies like Lockheed, telling people, you know, I'm interested in this UFO topic. I want to bring it to the public, and I want to bring it to the public in a way that is digestible and interesting. And so as part of that, he formed this company called To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, and then another company that's just called To the Stars. And they, together, those companies produce entertainment, movies, music, books, and also are saying that they're going to research what they call the phenomenon and unidentified aerial phenomena, UAP, and kind of with that dual approach, bring this to a younger audience and make people more receptive to it. And he has gathered, you know, intelligence officials, former, like I said, Lockheed people, and other scientists. And so there's some credibility there, but I have found that the community, the UFO community, even though I said I wasn't going to say that, has been kind of split by this whole thing. There's a lot of people, particularly the older crowd who's been around for more cycles of ufology, who are, I think, rightfully skeptical of what Tom DeLonge is doing and his motivations and the people around him. And they want more evidence and want fewer movies and books and more UFO data that has been promised. And then there's also a younger crowd, like you were saying, who's been kind of galvanized by this new information and really excited to find out about this government program and these videos and just really like an infusion of energy into stuff, and who are, I would say there's a lot of uncritical fans out there. So while this has really energized the community and brought in younger people, they are also younger people who haven't necessarily been around long enough to be a little jaded by it all.
Now, here are a couple schools of thought that I, and we'll, for now, we'll exclude people who don't believe that the aliens have visited or are visiting. Let's keep it to the people who believe that they visit on a regular basis and they're here. You have one group that says, hey, we've got a lot to fear here. And it's kind of like almost very akin to, you know, Stephen Hawking, I believe, who said, you know, if aliens are around, we don't want any part of them. And part of the justification for that, and I think there's something really to it, is this idea that if you look at human history, one of the very unfortunate facts is anytime a technologically superior civilization meets a technologically inferior, and that's not to say that they're bad or worse or inferior in general, but just in terms of technology, technologically inferior society in terms of their knowledge of various technology, that, you know, indigenous peoples and so forth, they have ended up in a very bad situation. They've been taken advantage from, their land has been stolen, they've been victimized in a million and one ways. So the thought process, I think, there is, look, by definition, if there are ETs, if there are aliens, and they come to visit, by that definition, by the fact of them showing up, they have to be more technologically advanced than us. So we are hosed. And that appeals to me, that theory, because it makes sense to me. Other people say, hey, the aliens are here. They are our star brothers. They're actively working behind the scenes, and they're trying to bring us to a new age of awakening. I personally am a little more skeptical of that viewpoint. I'm glad, and I've interviewed many people who think that. What did you find in the UFO community, the various factions, in regards to those opinions about ET and maybe some others I didn't include?
Sure. I think the tide has definitely turned in the direction of the first group, who see these potential visitors as a threat and see UFOs as a threat, and particularly a national security threat. And that is how a lot of the people who are pushing this forward right now have been talking about it, in part because a lot of them come from the Defense Department and are working behind the scenes with the Defense Department to help people consider how UFOs or UAP might be causing problems, particularly for pilots who are also flying up there. And so that has been the framing of a lot of the recent talk. And I've heard a lot less about the Star Brothers or Space Brothers these days. But it's interesting, like we talked about earlier, I wrote this book about SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which is more about looking for civilizations that are far away, not ones that might be driving spaceships here. And like you also said, those schools of thought exist there too. People like Stephen Hawking say exactly what you said, that when two civilizations with mismatched technology meet, it doesn't go well for the one with less advanced technology. And that there's no reason to think that the same wouldn't be true of alien civilizations. But then there's a larger group within SETI who says, if civilizations have survived long enough to build a bunch of advanced technology, then they must have figured out a way not to fight with each other so much and not to be so violent, or else they would have destroyed themselves already. And so they kind of take it as encouragement. If civilizations live that long, then they must be peaceful. And so those two schools of thought exist. And then I think there's another school of thought that kind of says all of that is invalid and we can't know anything about alien psychology, and maybe they don't think about anything in the same way we do, and war and peace are not even concepts in their minds. So I think I maybe fall in that middle or the latter group myself, of just the fact that we can't know anything about them or the way they grew up, I guess.
One thing that used to be like the overriding view, I think, in terms of people who believe that aliens exist and they visit us, was the idea that it was like a nuts and bolts craft. They jumped in their saucer from wherever they were, they flew over here, and they observed or did whatever they did. Very almost, very much along our model, what we would do when we would go to investigate the moon or Mars or whatever it might be. I think in recent decades, the idea of interdimensional travelers and more esoteric kind of explanations have come to the fore, and maybe not pushed that view out, but have certainly are living side by side with it. What did you find in terms of the idea of the nature of aliens and where they come from?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that the nuts and bolts idea of a physical craft, something that could land at Roswell and shatter a bunch of debris there, used to be more prevalent than it is. And now people are open to the idea that interdimensional things, or the idea that that the lights in the sky or whatever else you're seeing are products of your own consciousness, but not in a way that makes them just a hallucination, just in some way where your mind is connected to these other beings. And so I think those ideas are pretty prevalent, and I feel like it mirrors our understanding of how difficult actual physical nuts and bolts space travel really is. When modern UFO sightings started back in the late 1940s, we hadn't gone to space yet. And when we started going to space, it was maybe kind of easy to imagine that, we would have this exponential explosion of technology, and not in no time, but in a reasonable amount of time, we might be building Mars colonies and going way far off into the stars in some small number of generations. And I think as the space age for us has progressed, we've seen that that is not exactly how it was gone. You know, in the US, we just flew astronauts to space ourselves for the first time in years. And so I think maybe consciously or subconsciously, people started to rethink whether it was reasonable that you would literally fly across light years of space to go somewhere else to here.
And you have a chapter here called Riding the Extraterrestrial Hypothesis Highway into Area 51. What other interesting theories, and I don't know if you cover this in the book, did you find other than the ETH theory?
The biggest one that I found was just the idea that what people are seeing is some kind of classified technology from the U.S. military or some other country's military. And, back in the 1950s and 60s, when people first started developing aircraft in Area 51 stealth aircraft, people would see those and they would look so strange. And some people saw them and thought they were flying saucers, UFOs, because they were so much more advanced than anything we were familiar with. And if you kind of project that out to today, we should have some crazy stuff going on that people without security clearances don't know about. And so I don't know what all UFOs are, but I feel like classified aircraft probably account for some of them. Some scientists are fans of talking about the fact that we don't understand lots of atmospheric phenomena, and maybe what people are seeing is that. There's been some interesting stuff recently, particularly about the military sightings that happened with military instruments, that there's some kind of electronic warfare going on where you just kind of create ghost ships that don't really exist, but create data on them. I guess those are all nuts and bolts also. I did talk to one person in the book who is a kind of famous radio astronomer who believed for a while that he was communicating with aliens, and eventually came to the idea that what he was actually communicating with was our collective unconsciousness. Wow. And so I guess, that's one non-extraterrestrial but not nuts and bolts theory, is that what we project onto aliens is actually just some manifestation of our whatever a collective unconsciousness is.
Yeah, if you talk to about Area 51, we did an interview with Annie Jacobson, the journalist from the LA Times, and fascinating work that she did on that. And yes, many times those craft that they were working on, like the SR-71 and so forth, I believe, were thought to be alien craft because they were so different looking. But to me, the way I look at it is that some of that could definitely be true, and I'm sure that it is. I'm sure that the government, I know we always talk about things like the stealth bomber and the stealth fighter being the height of technology. Well, those things came out kind of like in the 1980s. I fully assume and believe that with the size of the black budgets and so forth, that we think the government is working on things that we don't know about and probably couldn't fathom. So I'm sure that some of these things, I even wonder about the Tic Tac video. It's not like, if the United States is working on a secret project, not everybody in the military knows about it. In fact, most of the military wouldn't know about it. So ostensibly, the U.S. Navy could be taking pictures of this thing, and rank and file pilots and so forth wouldn't know a thing about it. But the government could be doing experimentation. And that'd be pretty dangerous to do that with, craft, your own planes and so forth. But I mean, it's not beyond the possibility that that was a government experiment of some type. On the other hand, it could have been ETs. Who knows? But just because those pilots did not know about it, well, they shouldn't know about it because that wasn't their line of work. There's compartmentalization. So I think, again, we tend to think in these monoliths, the U.S. military. So the military would know about it. Well, not necessarily. I mean, anybody that's been in the military could say they didn't know necessarily national secrets or, the soldiers in World War II didn't know about the Manhattan Project, for example. So I think sometimes we think in monoliths, and sometimes that does not serve us well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that that is some of what has a little bit disturbed me about the way that people interpret the videos that we are seeing. Because, I mean, like we were saying earlier, I don't consider myself a total debunker, but I'm also not a believer. But what I believe the most about, in particular, the TikTok and the other videos that have come out recently, is that we just don't have enough information to know anything. It's premature to say they're our technology. It's very premature to say they're alien technology. And we just, you know, it's a mystery, which is what to us, but probably maybe not to some people in the right silo in government. But I am on the side of keeping them a mystery until we have more data to figure out what they are.
Now, I come from the perspective of a believer, but who has some skepticism on any one claim. So that's kind of where I come from. But I know that probably in your line of work, you deal with a lot of people who are hardcore skeptics. They're like, get this stuff out of my face. I don't believe in any of this stuff. Now, let's say you're talking to one of these people that you have a good relationship with. Otherwise, they're just not into the UFO thing. And maybe you wouldn't have this conversation, but let's say the conversation goes something like this. It's like, you know, Fred, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm a science-minded person, but, you know, I've been looking into this, and here's some interesting work that's being done. Here's some examples. What would those, Sarah, what would those examples be? Or would there be any?
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think, as this is not a specific example, I'll give specific examples after, but I mean, I think it's notable that in every, you know, quote unquote, official UFO investigation program, the U.S. government has run, and also in civilian-run investigation programs like MUFON's, there is always a percentage of things that no one can identify. And, you know, that's interesting, that's compelling. It doesn't mean they are unidentifiable. But I don't think, as far as I know, there's never been a project that has solved all of its cases. And what I, in general, say to people is that unlike other fields of investigation, it only takes one. If you're interested in the extraterrestrial hypothesis, you don't need 10, you don't need 10%, you literally just need one over the history of time. And so that was a different way of thinking for me. I think the most interesting ones are the recent videos. Those are the ones that are most compelling to me, because we know they are from military instruments. Now we know that at some point the military considered them unidentified, and they have a strange definition of what that means. But I think it's notable, and it's official, and it's data rather than an eyewitness report. And so I'm skeptical of those videos, but I am also, I think they're the best bet for finding out something truly interesting.
Now, I think when anybody takes on a project like this, a major project, a major book, that they go in with maybe a certain set of assumptions, and they come out with some things that maybe surprise them. Were there any surprises for you? And if so, what were they?
I thought that I went into the book fairly open-minded, but I think, and not as a debunker, just as an interested party. But I think really I thought that there was not a way that I would come out on the believer side. And I think that is still true. But I end the book actually by saying that the change is that I have been willing to admit that there's absolutely not a way for me to know with 100% certainty that, you know, every UFO is Venus or a classified aircraft. I can't know that it's not aliens, just like I don't think anyone can know for sure that it is aliens. And so I feel like I came away with a little intellectual humility. And I also, you know, I saw things myself that I couldn't identify. And so I didn't expect that necessarily. And I didn't come away with the sense that they were aliens, but I did come away with the sense of how people feel when they see something that is truly mysterious to them and behaving in ways that they don't understand, which is a sense of, you know, interest and awe and curiosity and just being really, I don't know, engaged with the sky and what's going on up there. And I thought I was that already because I read about astronomy and space all the time. But it's really made me pay attention to what's going on above my head in a way I didn't quite before.
Well, it's been a great conversation. I love this. I love the idea when you can, I love this, for example, when we had a conversation a few years back with Michael Shermer, Dr. Michael Shermer, when you can have a reasonable conversation with someone who comes from maybe less of a believer perspective, more of a skeptical perspective, and have a intellectual and productive conversation. I certainly feel that we've had that and I've enjoyed it. And everyone, check out the book, They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Sarah, where can people find the book?
They can find the book. It's on my website. There's links to a bunch of different places to buy it. My website is sarahscholes.com, S-C-O-L-E-S. It's also on Amazon and IndieBound and most other places that you can find books. Or if your bookstore is open, it might be there.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for tuning in to UFO Encounters. We appreciate it. And keep your eyes to the skies. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.